Yeah, I wrote something down while she was talking that, you know, of course she's in business to make money. Of course she had bills to pay and stuff, but she was just not so head down, but heads up about the opportunity to make a difference. Mm. That she didn't create, she jumped in with the co-ops and those groups of one that she found Rwanda and found it to be very open to what she was already in the mindset of wanting to do to help. That she didn't create these groups of women and say, hey, you should get together and band together. It's like it was already there, and she saw it and was like, this is great. I'm going to do this. Mm-hmm. Or you can take those opportunities with what you want to do possibly.
Yeah.
And look at it and go, okay, what's the culture like? Can this happen here, or is it already happening and it's just underground?
Yeah, I don't even think I thought of it that way, too. Who knows? There
could be the pros and the cons, because you got to work against culture and with culture.
Yeah, there's no way you can work against something. I think that's too cocky of a personality if you think that you can be above a cultural standpoint. And you've seen it time and time again how many times people do that.
Right, and maybe it's more, I guess I shouldn't say against it, more of recognizing the culture and to go with it. Go with the easy path, but kind of try to push it. A little bit here, a little bit, you know, just a little, even just doing that.
Well, yeah, that's how growth works.
Exactly.
That's how transformation and that's how progress and
over decades.
Yeah. And like, you can't just take it for face value and just keep it pushing. Like, you got, if you see something that needs some type of reformation, like, you need to take some type of little nudge to bend the rules to, like, kind of cheat the system to see how far you can go and then keep building that. And then that just kind of like creates a whole vine of different things. So, yeah.
Now, that was just a progressive feel there. I mean, they even have a hashtag, he for she.
Mm-hmm.
That's huge.
I think what tripped me up, honestly, was when she brought up the Constitution and like how it is it's in their legal obligation to hire a third of whatever it is of women. And I'm like, man, that's wild.
Yeah.
Like, it's in their document that helps run their country. Whether or not politics isn't already fucked as it is besides the point. Mm-hmm. The fact that it's in the document itself, it just makes me think, I'm like, okay, America.
Just because there's a mandate doesn't mean you're just filling a slot. It opens up a slot for women who really want to be a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to get out of that mindset just because you're mandated to bring a certain type of person in, you're just filling a hole. You're not. Look at it differently. Possibly look, reevaluate who you bring on board because you're supposed to do the right thing.
Yeah.
Look how many, just the three interns she talked about. The one she's expecting probably will be at the head of, in the ministry there.
Yeah, I thought it was
really. I mean, it's amazing.
It's like, I was telling somebody this recently. I think that passion as a, like, the concept of passion and what it can do for somebody can overshadow skill, because skill can be taught. You can't teach someone to be passionate about something. So I think that all of these women that have signed up for these internships probably feel seen with the opportunity, just as she probably did with the whole Rwanda. Because, like, corporate is corporate. Everyone has an understanding of what it is, who's ever worked in an industry. But she wanted something genuine, something real, substantial. And she saw it and she's like, wow, there's this opportunity I can take. And I think that a lot of these women probably are looking at things with the same kind of lens of, well, I understand what's expected of me. I could do this. Or if somebody presents me an opportunity to change and better myself individually, not by what society and conventional standards for Rwanda looks like. They obviously wanted to take that. And because it's there and it's in a way presenting itself in a healthy standard, it's also reinforcing women to feel safe to explore that. And that is going to help fuel that passion, is safety and exploration. And I think that it went to show for Grace and her relationship with her, her jumping on the gun and wanting to be a part of the project without any expectation of receiving anything back, because she understands what it could possibly do for the people in the community.
Right. And I think she's avoided the white savior.
Oh yeah.
Feel.
I think for sure.
I was really impressed with. Yes, she did mention can some of the funds go toward this as a suggestion? It wasn't a dictate. That's great, you know, to help the underserved or, you know, those that kind of need it the most. But she positioned it as can you look at this way? Because like, hey, hands off. You guys know best. I'm not coming in here twice a year.
I don't know how many times
she goes in, but and say, this is what you're going to do. She doesn't live there.
Right.
How can you say that other than just say, yeah, I really want to help. You guys decide.
Right.
You decide what needs to be done because I'm not here but 2 weeks a year maybe.
That's the thing where it comes down to over-romanticizing producing countries and farmers and then the idea that it shouldn't be a process of what's wrong with what they're doing. It's okay. So how can I reflect at my life and my perspective of life through theirs and find value with what they have to say on their own traditions and customs and everything? Like it shouldn't be a sense of, oh, this is wrong. This is a learning opportunity for me to find value in certain things that maybe I'm overlooking or I haven't had a chance to really sit and think about because it's part of their culture and it's not a part of whoever's is there, you know? And I think, like I said before, I think it's really important to be humble. Like, don't go with an expectation. Just be humble and open and have that open head, like you were saying, mm-hmm. with going and exploring other countries and their values and their customs. Do not oppress them, you know?
All right. Yeah, exactly. And it just as simple as her talking about that the initial farm, you know, splitting the trees in half, basically, one that they didn't weed mm-hmm. and mulch in the other. And, you know, in our thought process here in America or, you know, first world is like, well, heck yeah, you'd want to mulch and pull weeds. Let's simplify it. Maybe that's not the best way. Obviously, right. They're experimenting. Maybe there's something in the foliage or the weeds, quote unquote, that help the coffee grow better.
What's really interesting, too, not obviously knowing the financial stability of that co-op, like based off of past episodes, too, is that's a financial risk what they're doing. They're
hugely.
They're obviously using the money that they could be to just keeping the standard that they've been producing and pumping out and sending out. But instead, they're using the ability of understanding knowledge and having those resources by their side to take the risk to better themselves. And I feel like that in itself really stood out to how powerful these women in the co-op are. Like from the get-go, like the diplomatic kind of community situation of sitting and talking about the fundamentals of what they're doing and then to go out of their way and do a risk of experimentation on coffee trees where
for 3 years.
I was going to say it takes a substantial amount of years for coffee trees to be mature and actually produce the cherry and like are harvestable. And it's like they're doing these things with like I said, it's like certain things when you get a chance to sit and listen to stories of other people and their perspectives and they have knowledge and they have experiences that really sit and inspire you. And this is like a great reinforcement. This is shit that she just stumbled upon. And it's like that when it came to what you said about the underground idea that this is going on and no one knows about it. I'm like, that's the whole point of this podcast. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I keep saying the same thing over and over and over again, but it's literally the fucking point of the fucking podcast is that this shit is inspirational. What she's doing is inspirational. The idea that this is an available thing that can happen if you put in, of course, the work and the time is available. Like there's these things that people don't understand that are existing that are not highlighted enough that it's just inspirational and it's important to fucking understand.
Yeah. And that occasional listener for the podcast that wants to make a difference when mm-hmm. they buy a bag of coffee, yours truly included, do a little extra work in regards to where is that coffee coming from. And it's hard work to figure that out and know that when you buy that bag, it's going to make a difference. Yeah. But you also know when you buy that $6 bag of coffee beans, you're probably not. It may be a more expensive bag because of all these nuances.
Mm-hmm.
But it's worth it in the long run.
Yeah.
It's hard to do that research. It's hard to find, you know, maybe now going and researching artisan coffee imports and maybe find that trail of, oh, that's coffee on the shelf.
Yeah. Let me just like highlight Artisan because I've worked with them and her specifically as well, since she is a founder of it. They put traceability, they put the information on the farmers, and a lot of course, what roasters are looking for, which are cupping notes and cupping scores and defects and everything, and like altitude and everything and all that. But you had a chance to really like meet these like women through her website, and it's like there's full transparency there. And I think when you get the chance to see full transparency and what the people are doing, you get a good chance to understand what you're investing your money into is worth that money versus like if you go to coffee shops, you ask for traceability and transparency, a lot of the time it's gatekept. Like you don't get to know about that information.
Right.
Yeah. And it's like, that's why it's like, it's understand that's ethical practices and good sourcing and understanding what is important to be known.
Yeah. And I was just pulling up her website to kind of know how easy or how difficult can it be to really trace where that, how you can buy the coffee that you want to make a difference with.
Right.
You love that. And I love her story too, that she's really was getting into it for decaf. That's a person that loves the taste of coffee. If you're getting no kick from it, from the caffeine, you just loved the taste of coffee. That's a true coffee lover. Mm-hmm. That really, really is. That just hit me and it's like, I've never heard anybody really love decaf other than they'll drink decaf because it's at the time of day. They just don't want it to keep them up. But they really are drinking it for the caffeine.
Right.
It's like, okay, this woman loves coffee to pursue it for the decaf piece of it. Mm-hmm. Amazing. So, yeah, I'd go to Artisan Coffee Imports for sure just to see what's going on.
She offers specifically for Rwanda. She's trying to, like she said, develop Ethiopian as well. But I have tried all of the coffee that she has, and they're just all fucking great.
Man.
Just great. She's great at what she does.
Amazing. What a story. What a great story. Mm-hmm.